becomes a great artist. Have you ever wondered how Stephen King could sell over 350 million novels, or how Jimi Hendrix or Eric Clapton could play guitar as masters without formal training, or how Meryl Streep could be nominated for 21 Academy Awards? If you ask any of them, they will say the same thing. Training. You have to train. You have to practice your skill. Have you ever wondered how an athlete could become a great athlete? Have you ever wondered how LeBron James could make each of the last 8 NBA Finals playoffs, right? Or how Mariano Rivera, I don't know any of this stuff, I just told sports people to tell me sports stuff. Have you ever wondered how Mariano Rivera could be voted unanimously into the Baseball Hall of Fame, right? Or how Tom Brady could win 6 Super Bowl, I'm sorry, but Super Bowl championships and be the oldest quarterback to ever win a ring, right? You ask any of these great athletes how they became great, and they will say the same thing. It's practice. It's training. It's hard work to become the kind of person you want to be. And so today, that's what we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about training. I have decided to train. Have you ever wondered how you grow in your faith? Have you ever wondered how you want to deepen your relationship and your obedience to Jesus? It's not going to happen by magic. You're not going to wake up tomorrow and all of a sudden be a better Christian, be a more holy and righteous and obedient Christian. Growing in the Christian life, you have to train. You have to train. And so let's look at 1 Timothy 4:7-8. It says this: train yourself for godliness. For while bodily training is of some value, godliness is of value in every way, as it holds promise for the present life and also the life to come. Train yourself for godliness. Train yourself for godliness. And there's two words that's going to illuminate this passage for us to help us really explain what it means. First is this word train. This word train. So what does it mean to train? What does it mean to train? And so the Greek word for train is this word gymnazo, and it's where we get the word gym from. So think of like athletes training, right? It means to train or to practice or discipline yourself, right? It's not a magic word or a religious word. When the athletes were training in the Colosseum, right, they lifted weights, they ran, they restricted their diets for the Olympic Games, right? And what Paul is saying here is, hey, in the same way that those athletes prepare and practice and train for the games, so too you train for godliness. Train, practice, run drills, exercise for godliness. And the second word that we want to look at is obviously godliness. What does it mean to be godly? What is godliness? And I think most of us, when we hear the word godly, we just kind of assume like good. We put that word in there. Oh, be a good person, right? So if you're a nice person, like that's godly, right? Or if you're self-controlled, oh, that's godly. Or if you're a patient person, that means you're godly. But that's actually not what godliness is. Actually, godliness isn't really mostly about your moral character. Godliness is about your relationship with God. Godliness is what you feel about God, how you treat God. So a godly person is someone who respects God, a person who fears God, is someone who devotes their life to God. A godly person isn't just a good person. A godly person is someone who his whole life is centered around God. Like, that's what it means to be godly. And so what Paul is saying is this: hey, train, practice, exercise to respect God, to love God, to fear God. Train to love God. Run drills, do exercises, practice that teach you to train to love, respect, and honor God. Does that make sense? And let's think about these words, training godliness, for a second. Because first of all, in the idea of training, I want us to recognize that there's this idea of progress, right? There's this idea of progress. That Paul expects us to be more godly, to love God more, to honor and to respect God more tomorrow than we do today. Or to be more godly, to honor, to love, and to respect God more next year than this year, right? And I want us to recognize that is both a comfort and a challenge. The progress of godliness is both a comfort and a challenge. Because today, sometimes, you know, you might wake up and you might go the whole day and you look back on your day and you're like, man, I don't think I had a very godly day today, right? I couldn't wake up to pray and read the scriptures, right? I barely even like thought about God today, you know? I barely even prayed to him, right? I don't really feel like I love or respect or honor God as much as I should. And we expect ourselves to be perfect. We want to be perfectly godly right now. And the comfort is this: God isn't asking you to be perfectly godly right now. He's not asking you to be perfectly godly right now, but he is asking you to train. Like, sometimes you might be this kind of person. I'm definitely this kind of person. I beat myself up. So I'm like, man, I should be able to do this. I should be able to do that. I should be able to wake up every morning and read, like, 6 chapters of the Bible. I should be able to pray every single moment of my life and pray perfectly and pray these wonderful godly prayers. But if I asked you to run a marathon tomorrow, obviously you'd be like, oh, my gosh, that's a lot. Like, that's a lot to ask of me tomorrow, right? And it's the same thing here. God isn't expecting us to be perfect tomorrow, right? He's not expecting us to run the marathon tomorrow. He's asking us to train, to take a baby step, to not run the 26.2 miles, but maybe run half a mile, right? Maybe run a mile, maybe 3 miles, or 6 miles, or 12 miles, or whatever it is. God isn't asking you to be perfectly godly tomorrow, but he is asking you to train. And there is so much comfort in that. There is so much comfort in that. Because if God really wanted you to be perfect tomorrow, he would make you perfect tomorrow, right? He can do anything. He can make you perfectly godly tomorrow. But for some reason, God decides, that's not the way I'm going to do things. I'm not going to just make these people perfectly godly tomorrow. Instead, I'm going to have them train. And if that's kind of confusing to you and you're like, why would God not just make me perfect tomorrow? Like, I'm just so frustrated with my sin. I'm so frustrated with my inability to remember God and to be with God. Why can't I just be perfect tomorrow? We're going to come back to this point. But I wanted to give us a bit of encouragement from C.S. Lewis. And this is a wonderful quote, I think. And it really illuminates for me what this verse is talking about. It says this. This God, he's talking about God, who will in the long run be satisfied with nothing less than absolute perfect, will also be delighted with the first feeble, stumbling effort that you make tomorrow to do the simplest duty. As a great Christian writer, George MacDonald, pointed out, every father is pleased at the baby's first attempts to walk. No father would be satisfied with anything less than a firm, free, manly walk in a grown-up son. In the same way, he said, God is easy to please, but hard to satisfy. God is easy to please, but hard to satisfy. He's not asking you to be perfect right now. He's not asking you to fix yourself right now. He has grace and forgiveness and patience for you, but he's asking you to train. He's asking you to train. And in this comfort, there is also a challenge. In this comfort of, I don't need to be perfect tomorrow, there is also a challenge. You see, because Paul is expecting us to put in some effort. He's expecting us to put in some effort, some energy, some activity into our godliness. And I think that if we do, if some of us start to put in some energy, some activity into our godliness, we're going to realize that we are quite out of shape. Have you ever been back to the gym after a long time away? Or have you ever tried to run after not running for a long time? It hurts. It's awkward, right? And the discomfort, it's going to tempt us to stop trying. It's going to tempt us to never go back to the gym again. In fact, in order to avoid the pain, it's easier to just avoid training entirely. And I think that might be where some of us are at, right? We're like, oh, like we try. Maybe you wake up to train to read the Bible, or you try to love someone that's difficult to love, or whatever it is. You try and you meet that resistance and you're like, ooh, that's painful. It's so hard to love this person. It's so hard to wake up in the morning and pray. It's so hard to just be with God and to serve other people. You know what? Maybe my relationship with God is where I want it to be. You know, like, I know it could be better. I know it could be better, but you know what? I'm okay with where it's at now. I don't think I want to push into that effort. I don't think I want to put any more effort into this godliness, right? And if that's where you're at, man, I just want to warn you, because what you've done is you've prioritized your comfort over your relationship with God. You've decided that you and your pleasure and the ease of your life is more important than your relationship with the divine. You've said to God, okay, I know you enough. I don't really want to know you any deeper. I'm okay with where we're at right now. I think some of us experiencing the pain of training for godliness, or maybe not seeing the results as fast as we want to see the results, we've given up on training altogether. We've given up on experiencing a deeper love and affection for God. And the thing is, like, I really don't want to minimize that. Like, I don't want to say that you're ridiculous for giving up, because training for godliness is hard. It's really, really hard, because training is painful. I mean, let's think about the master trainer. Like, let's think about what it would mean to be perfectly godly right now, or to even train for godliness. The master trainer, the perfectly godly one, is Jesus, the only one who knew how to honor and love and respect God and everything. And if we're going to follow his path of godliness, We're going to follow what he thought it meant to be godly and to live in a godly way. This is what he said about training for godliness. He says, if anyone would come after me to live this life of godliness, of honoring and loving and respecting God, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will save it. In Jesus' mind, this is what training for godliness looks like. This is what it means to practice being godliness. This is what the exercises and the drills and the disciplines of godliness look like. Training for godliness is learning to say no to yourself and yes to God every day. Training for godliness is learning to say no to yourself and yes to God every day. In the same way that Jesus said no to himself and yes to God by loving the poor and loving us on the cross, right? And loving the sick and the dying and the hypocritical and the religious. Jesus said no to himself and yes to God in the same way. When we follow Jesus in his path of godliness, we learn what it means to say no to ourselves and yes to God. Have you ever wondered how the early Christians could face being crucified, being thrown to lions, being burned alive? Have you ever wondered how the Japanese Christians of the 16th and the 17th century could face them and their families being beaten and drowned? Have you ever wondered how the Coptic Christians today in Egypt can face public shaming and beheading? This is how they have learned how to say no to self and yes to Jesus. They have learned in the face of torture, in the face of shame, and in the face of death to say no to self and yes to Jesus. In fact, this is how the earliest Christian fathers, this is how they saw Christian education. Like, this is what Bible studies and Sunday school and new membership classes, that's what they were. It was learning, discipleship was learning how to die. It was learning how to take up your cross and die. Christian training was learning how to be a martyr. It was teaching you the truths of the scriptures, of God's love for you and kindness for you, so that when the day came, when inevitably the Roman government knocked on your door and put you in front of the sword, you would know how to say no to self and yes to Jesus. You would have trained to say no to yourself and yes to Jesus. And so the question I have for us today is this: Christian, is your life preparing you to die? Is your life preparing you for martyrdom? The practices that you engage in, the exercises that you engage in, are they training you to say yes to yourself, or are they training you to say no to yourself and yes to Jesus? Are you training? Are you becoming the kind of person where at the end of your life, at the threat of death, you will be able to say no to self and yes to Jesus? Students, are you training in your studies to say no to yourself and yes to Jesus? Are you pursuing an education to secure a good life for yourself? Or are you studying to become a greater servant in God's kingdom? Are you serving your friends, your classmates, and being generous with them in order to glorify God? Or are you compromising to get love and approval from them? Are you learning to say no to yourself and yes to Jesus? Single people, are you using your singleness to say no to yourself and yes to Jesus? Are you committing to a life of sexual self-control, saying no to your urges and yes to God's will for you? Are you using your singleness and the freedom of your singleness to serve others, to invite people into your life? Or are you using your life of singleness and your freedom to serve yourself and to just do whatever you would like to do? Single people, are you learning to say no to yourself and yes to Jesus? Married people, are you training in your marriage to say no to yourself and yes to Jesus? Are you giving up your own wants, your own desires, your own feelings in order to love and serve your spouse to the glory of God? Are you using the loving community of your marriage to invite others in, maybe children, maybe friends, maybe single friends, into the community of your marriage to love and serve them? Or are you using marriage to serve your own desires, to satisfy your own desires? Married people, are you learning to say no to yourself and yes to Jesus? Those of us who work, are you training in work to say no to yourself and yes to Jesus? Is work a way of providing yourself money and security and a sense of pride for yourself and your family? Or is it a by means by which you serve and love others? Are you using your salary to indulge yourself or to serve the poor and the marginalized, the unchurched and the needy? Are you learning to say no to yourself and yes to Jesus? And retired people or unemployed people, are you using that time to train to say no to self and yes to Jesus? Is your freedom used for leisure or is it used for service, to commit to prayer and Bible study and service? Are you using your freedom to indulge yourself in your passions or to serve Jesus? Are you learning to say no to self and yes to Jesus? And you might be wondering, and some of you might be listening and being like, man, this is like a hard word. Like, where is the grace in all this? Like, where is the grace, right? And I'll tell you where the grace is. When you've taken on a life of training and you're working hard and you're straining and you're trying to love people that are difficult to love, you're trying to give more than you can possibly give, you're trying to resist sin in your life, and you can't go on any further, and you cry out like, God, I hate this. Like, I can't do this anymore. Right? That is where the grace is. That is where you are learning God's strength in the midst of your weakness. And in fact, that is where you're learning Jesus' strength to love the unlovable and to serve those who don't want to be served and the sick and the poor and the needy. As you try to engage yourself in Jesus' life, you appreciate more, man, Jesus is an awesome God, and you experience grace there. Let me tell you where the grace is. When you've taken on a life of training and you're working hard and you're straining, and you're trying to love the people that are difficult to love, and you're trying to give more than you can give and resist sin in your life, and in that moment you fail. In anger, you lash out at someone. You fall into sexual temptation and sin. You use your time and your money selfishly. That's where the grace is. When you turn up to God and say, man, I messed up. God, forgive me. This is hard. This is really hard. But I thank you that you were able to say no to yourself, Jesus, and yes to God, that you have saved me and forgiven me in this moment. You see, grace and growth only exist in the tension of training. Grace and growth only exist in the tension of training, because you're not going to get stronger by lifting the same weights over and over and over again. Eventually, you're going to need to lift heavier weights. You're not going to get better at music if you just play the same songs over and over and over again. You're going to need to learn new songs and new techniques. And in the same way, you're not going to become a more mature Christian, more in love with Jesus, by living in the same way you've been living over and over and over again, right? You're not going to be able to just love God more and serve God more if you just settle for an easy kind of obedience. If you just settle for loving the kind of people that are easy to love, giving of yourself the kind of ways where it's easy to give, that you're never actually going to appreciate more growth and appreciate God. And so growth only exists in that tension of training, in the tension of trying something new and failing or finding yourself weak. And yet grace only exists there as well. Because if you're only going to ever live a life where you feel comfortable and safe and secure, you're never going to need to learn what it means to trust God for grace in the midst of your weakness. If you only practice an easy kind of obedience, you're never going to need to learn what it means to trust in the grace of God for your failure. Training for godliness is the only way you'll be able to know and experience more of God's love, forgiveness, and grace for you. And in fact, I think this is specifically why God doesn't want us to be perfectly godly right now. I think this is why God wants us to train for godliness, because ultimately what godliness is a need for God, right? Is a respect and a love for God. And ultimately what he wants for us is to come to the end of ourselves and say, God, I can't do this anymore. This is so hard, right? To mess up and fail and say, God, I'm so sorry. I need you in this moment. And in that moment, that is training for godliness. Ultimately, God doesn't just want us to be good people. He doesn't just want us to be good people. He wants us to know his grace and forgiveness and mercy. But as long as you never step into a place where you need to rely on his grace, you'll never actually experience it. If you settle for the things that you can do in your own power, you'll never experience the power of his grace. And here's the thing. I've been using a physical metaphor this whole time, right? Like, oh, training for godliness is like training your muscles. But it's actually not like training your muscles. Because at the end of training your muscles, at the end of physical training, you can look at yourself like, man, I am so much stronger. I'm so much more independent now. I'm like a great person now. That's what physical training is. But actually training for godliness, you actually just become weaker and weaker and weaker, right? The more that you push into faithfulness, the more that you try something that's difficult to do, the more you're just going to realize, man, I cannot do this. Like, this is hard. Like, I can't give this much. Like, I can't love this much. Like, I can't do this. And as the more that you realize your weakness, the more that you're open to the grace and the forgiveness of God. And that's painful at first. We don't like seeing our weakness. We don't like seeing our need. We don't like seeing how difficult it is for us to love other people. We don't like seeing how greedy we are and how selfish we are, right? But training for godliness, it's less like training your muscles and more like training your palate. It's more like training your taste. Training for godliness is learning to love the taste of what is good and reject the taste of what is bad. So I imagine a kid who loves McDonald's. Like, all they eat is McDonald's, and every single day all they eat is McDonald's. And they grow up and they only eat McDonald's. And then one day they try something. They try something new, and it's really, really good. But no matter what it is, it's like, ooh, that's not McDonald's. I don't want that. Like, that's, I reject that. That is bad. Right? And I'm not like ragging on McDonald's. I love McDonald's. Right? But there's better things out there than McDonald's. Right? There's better food out there than McDonald's. But until this kid devotes himself to trying and acquiring this new taste, he's never going to appreciate what it means to appreciate and love and the grace of this good food. Does that make sense? And in the same way, for us, God is an acquired taste. Relying on God's grace, relying on God's forgiveness, that is an acquired taste. Because naturally, we don't want to see that we're needy. We don't want to see that we need God's grace. Like, we'd rather just try to do what we can do on our own power, right? But until we learn to try something new and accept that, man, this is hard and I can't do this, but God, I accept your grace, we're going to realize that that is the better life. That the life of depending on God, relying on his grace for strength, relying on his forgiveness for mercy, right? That is really what is good in life. In fact, that's what Paul means when he says that godliness is of value in this life and the life to come. And this is what Jesus means when he says that if you lose your life for him, you'll find it, right? They're promising that if you give up your temporary comfort, if you give up your temporary pleasure and train for godliness, you will receive an eternal comfort, an eternal pleasure that is better than anything this world has to offer. Because being loved by God, receiving the grace of God, needing God, depending on God, being accepted and forgiven by God, that is better than any comfort that we can build for ourselves. And so really quickly, I'm going to give you guys an exercise to train for godliness. So, I mean, there's a lot of exercises you can do to train for godliness. Coming to church every Sunday, that's a way of you saying no to yourself and yes to Jesus. Right? Waking up every single morning to read the Bible and to pray. That's a way of you saying no to yourself and yes to Jesus. But I'm going to give you a kind of a more intense spiritual exercise, a spiritual drill for you to run. It's a practice that for the past 2,000 to 3,000 years people have been doing in order to say no to themselves and yes to God. And the practice is called fasting. Fasting. And I'm sure you guys have heard of it before. If you're Christian, Jesus actually expects you guys to fast pretty regularly. And so what fasting is historically what it has been is choosing to not eat or drink for a certain amount of time in order to devote yourself more deeply to God. It's a way of learning how to say no to yourself and yes to Jesus, to need God more than you need food or water. And the practice of fasting has changed a lot in the past 50 years or something like that. So now people have like television fasts, right? Where they give up television or social media fasts, like Instagram fasts, right? Or smartphone fasts or that kind of thing. But regardless of the kind of fast, the point is the same. The point is learning how to say no to yourself and yes to Jesus. The point is forcing yourself to be hungry so that you can learn in the midst of hunger to say no to yourself and yes to Jesus. And so if you want to try to start fasting, this is what I recommend doing. Think about something that would be difficult for you to give up. Something that is good, but it would really hurt for you to lose. So maybe for some of you, it's television. Maybe for some of you, it's your smartphone. Maybe for some of you, it's Instagram or video games, right? Maybe for some of us, it might be food, right? So just identify what it would be that's difficult for you to give up. And for a week, just for a week, give that thing up. Don't tell anyone else. Jesus says to not tell anyone else, but just give that thing up. And put it away. Just don't tell anyone else. Just put it away. And I promise you that it's going to be difficult. It's going to be really, really hard. Like, if you decide to give up your smartphone this week, what's going to happen is you're going to be sitting somewhere and you're going to be bored and you're going to reach for your smartphone. You're going to be like, oh, man, I want my smartphone, right? Or you're going to be sitting at, if you give up television, you're going to be sitting at home and you're going to be like, oh man, I'm bored. I'm going to just turn on television, right? But then you'll have put the remote away or something like that. And instinctively, you're going to be reaching to these different things, right? And you're going to be tempted. You're going to be tempted to go to Instagram or to go to Brawl Stars or go to television or whatever it is to just fill some need inside of you. And in that moment, recognize what you're craving and instead turn that craving to God. If you've given up your phone, you're going to feel lonely and disconnected. And so when you reach for your phone and recognize that it's not there, that's an opportunity for you to turn to God and say, God, I feel so lonely. Like, I feel so disconnected. I just want something right now. But God, more than anything else that I want you. I want fellowship with you, and I want to be engaged with you. If you give up, like, television or Instagram or video games or something like that, you're going to be bored a lot. You're going to be bored a lot. And in that moment, like when you're like, when you instinctively turn your phone to open Instagram or turn your phone to open Facebook or television or whatever, that's a moment. Instead of turning there, turn to God and say, like, God, I'm bored. Like, I'm really bored. I just want something to entertain me right now. But God, you know what? I realize you're better than any other joy, any other pleasure I could have. Jesus, right now I want to be with you and not with Instagram, not with whatever it is. And if you give up food, if you decide to give up food, I'm going to give you some warnings. Do not give up water. Don't give up water, especially if this is your first time fasting. Don't give up water. And you probably should not go for a week giving up food. You probably shouldn't. What I actually recommend doing is just restricting your diet so that you'll experience hunger. And I think each of you guys knows what that means for yourself, what it means to restrict your diet enough to experience hunger. And not an unhealthy, like, some of you might actually need to go see your doctors before you do this kind of thing. But okay, this is what I did. So about 3 years ago, I fasted for 10 days on food. And for me, what that meant was restricting myself to one meal per day. And it would be dinner after the sunset. I know I don't eat breakfast a lot, and so it wouldn't be that hard for me to skip breakfast. But I know that, you know what, come lunchtime, if I don't have lunch, I'm going to get hungry. Like, I'm going to want something. I'm going to be looking for something, right? And so for those 10 days, man, I just realized how much my friends talk about food, like how much my friends go out to eat, right? I realized how often, how habitually I just turn to food in order to satisfy. If I'm bored, if I'm feeling lonely, if I'm feeling stressed, I just turn to food, right? And in those moments, right, like sometimes maybe I wasn't working at Winnersburg at the time, but my coworker would come to me and be frustrated. It would be annoying or whatever it is. I would just lash out immediately because I'm frustrated, because I'm hungry. And in that moment, I'm like, oh my gosh, God, like, I'm not motivated to love people by love or you. I'm motivated by food. Like, I just need food. That's really what's empowering me to love people. And in that moment, as I experience that tension, as I experience that weakness, as I experience that need, that's an opportunity for me then to go to God, to God, man, I need you. Like, I need you so much. I can't even be a kind person without food. But God, I trust that, like, I need you more than I need food. And anytime, and what I love about hunger fasting is that it's wonderful. It's a bodily reminder. It's something that you literally cannot forget. Like, your body's going to remind you when you get hungry. And so anytime my stomach growled, anytime I felt that pang of hunger, it was just a reminder to turn to God and say, God, I need you more than I need food. Like, I want you more than I want food right now. And sometimes I don't believe it. Sometimes I really want food more than I want you. But God, really, like, right now, I trust in your grace. I trust in your forgiveness. Even if I love this other thing more than you, I trust that you love me here and you're with me here. And you see, as we fast, as fasting becomes a normal regimen for us, a normal exercise in our spiritual lives, we are learning to say no to self and yes to Jesus. Even things we need, like food, we learn in the hunger, in the desire that we are weak, that we are needy, that we desperately need God. And in the tension, in the struggle, we experience grace. When you're hungry and angry, and you lift up your hunger and your anger to prayer, you receive grace, patience, and love. When you accidentally break your fast and eat something without realizing it, you just realize, man, God, I can't even control myself, right? And that's where you experience grace. That's just another way for God to remind you. You're loved. You're accepted here. And more than that, in the difficulty, in the tension, in the struggle of saying no to yourself and yes to God, you learn a little bit more about the greatness of the master trainer, the only person who really knew how to say no to self and yes to God. In fact, you learn a little bit more about grace because we learn that Jesus said no to himself and yes to us. In the hunger, in the desire, in the want, you are just experiencing a little bit of what Jesus experienced for you. Jesus, even though he was in the very status of God, he decided to say no to himself and yes to us. Rather than staying in the comfort of heaven, he descended into the earth. Rather than living a life of wealth and success, he lived a life of poverty and service. He said no to himself and yes to the poor, to the sick, to the sinful, and to the rejected. And on the cross, as he suffered the consequence of our sin, rather than freeing himself from pain, rather than saving his own life, he said no to himself and yes to us. And the glory of the Christian life is that whoever wants to save their life is going to lose it. But whoever loses their life will save it. Because 3 days later, Jesus came back to life and we too live in his life, right? So train yourself to say no to yourself, no to your own life, no to your own pleasure, and yes to Jesus. And trust that whatever Jesus provides for you is better than anything that this world has to offer. God is not asking us to do anything for him that he has not already done for us. Learn to say no to ourselves and yes to the God who has already said yes to us. Let's pray. Oh, God, you are a good God. And, oh, man, I don't deserve to be saying any of these things. Who am I to be talking about self-control and talking about giving up my own pleasure and my own need? But God, I trust that you love me. I trust that you accept me here. And as we enter into this time of communion, help me to remember what it meant for you to say no to yourself and yes to me. We lift this up in the name of Jesus and the power of the Holy Spirit.